All right, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting live from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. The real world. Have you listened? Have you not? It's UBC Film Society's radio segment, where we talk about all things film related. I'm Lily, as usual.
I'm Emma, also as usual.
And we've got a very special guest back for round two.
I think it is round two. And I'm Zach, as unusual.
Zach, as unusual, is our very own, the UBC Film Society's chairperson.
Co-chairperson.
Shout out to you, Jessica.
Love Jess.
We're still trying to get Jessica to come on the show, but we've got half of the chair here today, and we're oh so excited. We're going to get into a very fun topic, but first, I'm going to give a couple Film Sock updates. Not only do we host a radio show, but we host a bunch of other film-related events. If you're interested in looking those up, you can head to our Instagram, is where we post a lot of updates on what we host. And join us this Thursday, so that's coming up tomorrow, at 6 p.m. We are doing two Palestinian films. One is Gaza Mon Amour. I don't know. Mon Amour.
Yep.
It's from 2020, and then it's followed by Divine Intervention 2002, and that is at 8 p.m. So two screenings tomorrow in the nest.
The egg in the nest.
Before we hop into today's topic, we are going to play a couple of ads, so we will be right back.
Oh, are we down with them?
No, they must have seen you.
I know that you're not too ambitious.
I don't have any friends, and you can too. Tune into Teachable Moments on 101.9 FM every Tuesday at 4 p.m. if you're a f***ing dork.
I specifically said no geeks.
But my mom says I'm cool.
Portland-based band Glitter Fox have always channeled their experiences as queer and neurodivergent artists into their Americana, grunge, and dance-infused indie rock. And you can hear it all in Vancouver on September 22nd at the Biltmore Cabaret. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com.
No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie. Eat. Energize.
All right, we are back. And today, on this episode of The Real World, we are talking about a very fun topic that Zach brought up, and that is movies that are so bad they're good. So I'd like to just do a little bit, what does that mean to you?
It's a loaded question.
Okay.
Like, it means so much. It's movies that you watch that are inherently awful. They're incompetent, they don't follow any rules really, and they're just horrible, horrible masterpieces that you can watch and you can just laugh at. And it's such a joyous experience finding one of these gems, especially the ones that are more like independent movies. made by, you know, people like, you know, Tommy Wiseau, like The Room. That's a perfect example of one of the so bad it's good movies. But also, you know, there's a studio movies that are absolutely horrible. Yes. And we're talking about one that Emma loves called Morbius.
Ooh, Morbius. Any more pets listening? I don't, I'm not going to get a response because it's radio. Morbin time. But I'm sure there are. I know there's more pets out there.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure.
Is that what they call themselves? Morbeds?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Very committed fan.
Do you identify with that
as
community?
A morped? Yeah, I'm going to get it tattooed across my knuckles.
Good. Morped. I really see that for you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you. It's perfect. Why tattoo. I should be given money. I can make good financial decisions relating to Morbius.
Okay. Okay. So does it, like, Morbius, we'll get into Morbius more, but like for So Bad It's Good movies for you, Emma, like, was that something that you watched the first time and, like, you didn't appreciate and then, like, it grew on you? Like, what was your journey with this So Bad It's Good movie?
I think, because I saw it right at, like, the height of, like, the Morbius craze, like, when everyone was, like, going to see it, ironically.
Oh, so
I was, like,
what a time to be alive.
Oh, the best. Literally the best. So I saw it and I was like, yeah, that's obviously a terrible movie. And then watched it two more times with, like, various other people. I think there's something about this joy of just, like, sitting someone down and watching them realize, like, oh, no, this is not going to get better. Like, this is going to stay bad and keep getting worse. It's really just, like, it's honestly insane to me how it just built on itself in such a way of just getting worse and worse and worse only to end just in the gutter.
Yeah. I love that because that is almost... Yeah, I guess this is the whole point. That's what makes them so incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're almost just so rare in how bad they are that it's like an achievement.
Yeah. Exactly. And you're sitting thinking, it's like, oh, maybe I can do something one day if this got greenlit for millions of dollars.
If not for anything, these movies stand in to inspire young filmmakers to know, okay, it's possible, like, you can actually do anything because this exists.
The way I view it is, like, it's like a spectrum. And on one end, you have just the most incredible movies that are actually good ever made. And, you know, you can watch those endlessly and just appreciate them for what they are. And then the exact opposite end is appreciating these horrible movies that should not exist for everything that they aren't.
Okay. I love it. I feel like this sums it up better for me. Because, like, when you brought this up, I was like, I don't know what you even mean, Zach.
Yeah. No, it's once you dive into it, just truly understand the art form.
Okay. I'm totally into it. I want to make... Do you have a list on Letterboxd going?
I don't, but I
have a list on my mind.
Because
that would be an awesome list of It's So Bad It's Good. Or just a tag, I guess.
Give me ideas here. I got to make one.
Okay, I loved it. I better see that pop up on your Letterboxd.
Oh, there's so many. I just need to remember them all.
Okay.
You know, but can't talk about all of them today.
Okay.
But we're talking about the very, very special ones.
Yes. Today we've got four. Zach picked three. Emma picked one. Let's jump right in. We're going to start off first with The Happening.
All right. So, when I divide So Bad It's Good movies into two subsections. There's the subsection that is studio-based, that's funded by, like, all these different studios and stuff like that. And then there's the independent one. So The Happening is a studio So Bad It's Good movie directed by the one and only M. Night Shyamalan. And this is a point in his career, because this movie came out in, like, 2008. This was a point where we didn't really know what we're getting with an M. Night Shyamalan movie, because he started off his career so strong with The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, which are great movies, but then it just starts to, like, he slowly starts to lose, like, I guess, control or just, like, what he wants to make, like, or, like, the ability to make a good movie. He just kind of forgets how to. And I feel like it comes to a head with The Happening. So The Happening, again, made in 2008, starring Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel. It's basically, like, Mark Wahlberg's a science teacher, which, terrible casting. It's amazing, but, like, it's horrible. And this, like, outbreak starts happening, and it just, like, people just start killing themselves. For no reason, people just start killing themselves. And it's all happening in, like, the northeastern United States. So it's like it's about like his journey getting away from the happening, and it's just incredible. It's a treasure trove of just so bad it's good, like scenes. Like you can pick any scene in this movie and just laugh your ass off about it. Like one of my favorite scenes is like at the beginning, Mark Wahlberg is hosting this or he's teaching the science class. And he's, like, talking to this guy. I think his name is Jake in the class. And he's like, Jake doesn't care. He's, like, the stereotypical, like, popular, handsome boy. And he's like, why is this happening? Like, he's trying to, like, again, why is this happening? That word keeps coming up a lot in the movie. And he's asking, like, the class about it. And he gets to Jake. And Jake doesn't have an answer. He doesn't care. And Mark Wahlberg, like with a straight face, just looks at him like this child. And he's like, you know why you should care about science, Jake? Because your face is perfect. And then everyone's just like, what the fuck? Like, where did that come from? And then, it's full of just crazy lines like that. Like Zooey Deschanel, for some reason, looks like her soul was sucked out of her body from the movie. It's crazy because you're a big Zooey Deschanel fan, right?
Yes, that's why I really wanted to watch it, and I did finish it on the bus to school this morning.
That's how you should do it.
Yeah, it was crazy. I gasped. My roommate Mia, she's like, "Lily, stop gasping on the bus." I was also playing it in the open, no earbuds in.
Wow.
And I was like, just watching, and Mia's like, "Is that Mark Wahlberg? Isn't he like canceled or something?"
Yeah.
The lady across from us chimes in. She's like, "Yes." And then gives all this backstory onto why Mark Wahlberg has been canceled. Okay, all that's to say, I watched for Zooey. Let's get that straight. Not for Mark.
I think you got the perfect viewing experience out of that.
Yes.
Like that sounds like the optimal way. Like you get like you know how when you watch a good movie, you need to like everything needs to be perfect with the setting.
Yeah.
Everything like the crowd needs to be good. If you're watching it in a crowd, it needs to be a nice dark theater. For these movies, you can watch them anywhere. Like, you can watch them on your phone, on the bus, without
headphones.
That's
another reason why they're actually kind of amazing.
Exactly. Like, it enhances the experience.
Yeah. So I had a really great experience, one I'll never forget, on the bus this morning. And yeah, so apologies for... I've got a lot to get off my chest. Like, I haven't really even processed what I experienced.
It takes a couple days.
Yeah. The whole thing was quite shocking. But okay, so Zooey Deschanel is playing Mark's like wife.
Yeah. Fiance.
They're having marital issues. That's a little bit of a side plot that's also not really relevant other to than the fact that once this huge extreme thing has happened, the happening.
Whoa.
sorry about that. That was crazy. At the very end, like they're very back to normal. So for me, like their relationship just represents like how people go back to their normal day-to-day lives after like something, a huge worldwide crisis occurs.
Yeah. Well, there's that one scene too, like that's supposed to be like, I guess the climax of their like marital problems where like Mark Wahlberg's like talking to her about like cough syrup and how he like almost like bought this bottle of cough syrup because the lady at the counter was cute, but he didn't.
Wow.
I'm so confused. Explain it. Like,
that's the thing. It's like, I don't think there's one interpretation to it. Like, I don't really have to me, it's just funny. Like, when I see this, I just start laughing because I see someone who doesn't know what they want to do.
Yeah.
And they do it anyway.
Okay.
And so they make this fucking scene. And it's just like, because like earlier in the movie, she tells Mark Wahlberg, Zooey Deschanel tells Mark Wahlberg that she was like talking to this guy or like went for like a cup of coffee with him.
She went for dessert.
Oh,
there you go. Very romantic. Very romantic.
Very romantic. Compared to cough syrup, at least.
I know.
But yeah, like it's kind of like him saying like, oh, it's all right. I trust you, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
So I'll tell you this. So we're both like even or something like that. And then like you said, they kind of go back to normal. And I guess spoiler too. Because if you have ever seen an M. Night Shyamalan movie, there's a twist in all of them. And the twist in this movie was that the happening of the movie was just plants killing people.
Wow.
Well, I don't know. I think the happening for me was that, like, the twist was that you don't get to know. It was like, oh, okay, the audience has been wondering, and they're waiting and waiting, and they're like, so the big theory is, like, why is everyone killing themselves? Like, this huge crisis is happening. Something has gotten into like northeastern U.S. Is it terrorist attacks? Is it the government releasing something? The CIA is testing drugs that seem to have the same compound that is what is being... Is it natural? Is nature fighting back? And you're like waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting. And by the way, you just don't get to know. But I kind of like that. Like, to me, that is the twist.
You just reminded me of the scene where like... The lady's like, check this out in the diner, and shows him like the phone of this guy like in the zoo, and the tigers start like tearing him apart, and the lady goes, what kind of terrorists are these?
Okay, so wait,
it's so good.
This leads me to my next question. Sorry, I'm really overwhelmed. Like, yeah. I just wrote down basically a lot of things that I had to ask you.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that satire? Because come on, there's one scene, sorry, they're driving, they're driving away and they're like, we have to go somewhere where there's no people. But also they're kind of like looking for people because like safety in numbers. But then they realize, they start to think like, okay, maybe numbers is where we're not safe. Maybe we have to go somewhere that's like isolated.
Yeah.
And so they're driving on this road and they see it, they take one road and everyone's dead on that road. So they turn around, they drive this other way, and they see like a military vehicle coming towards them. And the line is, like, it's the military, we're saved. Like, and I'm just like, okay, is this actually just maybe really self-aware and actually very intelligent? And like a whole satire on how, not only like how humans react to global like crises, but movies that are made about that.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, I think there's inherently some, like, deep, deep layer of satire with all these movies. Because, like, you know, you watch something like The Room or, like, we'll talk about it later, but Who Killed Captain Alex? And you can just see, like, you know, it's not supposed to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And, like, no sane person can watch this movie and be like, ugh, give this an Oscar. You know, like, it's bad. But they willingly release it.
Yeah.
So they have to, like, there has to be some form of, like, joke or, like, tongue-in-cheek thing to it.
I know. And I believe that there is. Mm-hmm. I choose to believe
that
it's actually kind of funny in that way of being self-aware. I think it is. I totally think it is, actually.
Yeah.
I think a lot of parts are really ridiculous and the performances are very ridiculous.
Goodness.
Like, that's not to say that the whole thing... Yeah. Like, went over all your heads, guys. It's actually a masterpiece. Like, that's not what I'm saying. No, but
the amount of close-ups on Mark Wahlberg's big fucking head is so funny, and he's always like giving like the same like look the entire time, where he's like worried.
Yeah, but like, there's no depth to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's so surface level.
He just kind of has the same little scrunch in his forehead, and that's about it.
And it like it's like that pitch in his voice where it's just, guys, you know,
yes.
What are we gonna do?
It's so accurate. It's like, give me a second.
Let me think.
I need a thing.
They're killing themselves back there. Just give me a second. Yeah. I gotta think.
And to think he runs through his what grade 9 investigative like methods that he teaches his 14-year-old. He's like, okay, first I need to think of causes. And we're supposed to sit here and believe that like he's about to solve it. He doesn't solve anything, honestly.
No one does.
No, to me, he always looks like he's doing like long division in his head. Like, in any performance, I'm sitting there, he's like, his ass is figuring out.
He probably
out that
is.
Problem.
That's definitely like his acting method.
You see the gears turning in his head.
Oh my gosh. So ridiculous.
But yeah, The Happening.
It's crazy. Okay, but also, beautiful. I'd also like to say that there are, like, if it was executed in a different way, like, there are some aspects to this that I think make really cool plot. Like, I think that just, it's not, like, hidden, the stuff that Shyamalan's, like, warning us about climate change. And, like, the idea that nature, like, eventually will fight back. But it's, like, obviously all of our own actions, and that things are coming in as warnings. And obviously, like, what's happening in the world is not a warning anymore. Like, there's horrible, horrible, like, natural, not so natural disasters occurring. So I do like that as, like, a theme for a film. I also like the settings. Like, I like his commentary on urban versus suburban, like, the role that the city plays in disaster and where that's, like, disaster is centralized, like, how word spreads, communication. I really like a lot of themes that are happening.
Yeah, and then eventually, like, towards the end, they get onto the rural, and then they meet that lady.
And like, so people who... And so it has, like, all these different characters of, like, and their role in disaster. So you've got like the random lady who's completely removed herself from society. She says, society doesn't care about me, so I don't care about society. Mm-hmm. And so she's completely removed herself. She just like kind of like prays in her garden or whatever. And then you've got like the crazy gunmen who are like, trust no one. I'll shoot anyone who comes onto my porch. Yeah. So it shows like all these really like crazy, but like kind of silly characters of like the role that each type of person would play.
Absolutely.
In a disaster like this, which I think was really funny.
It's very much like a caricature.
Yes.
Like everything's very exaggerated.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. It's so good.
It was awesome. Yeah, it had me thinking of like other movies like that, just of that show people's like fear in government. Like I was thinking about the ones that are so like there's like the virus movies like Contagion. I watched Contagion recently, so that was on my mind. But even like government like systems being hacked. I do really like that stuff in theory. Like Leave the World Behind. Have you guys seen Leave the World Behind?
No.
That was like almost so bad it's good, but it was kind of just so bad, but there was like a couple plot points that I think about all the time.
Yeah.
Like about how like people can hack into like the government. I don't actually understand how it happened, but like they hack in and then all of a sudden they're like programming all the Teslas to like do different things. Like that stuff actually I think is really cool. Because it's like, whoa, I don't know, anything could happen. So I did like that aspect of that, of just like reactions in global crisis. But those are like, I just really had to decompress from that.
The ballot, I mean, you just saw it. So it's like I said, it's one of those movies where it takes a couple days to really set in.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, I need to watch this guy get run over by a lawnmower again. And
oh my God, please. Like,
it's incredible. By the way, I want to ask, what did you think of the whole pregnancy thing at the end?
Okay, yeah. So what the hell?
I know, like her face at the end kills
me. So confused. She just kind of like smiles, then she goes and does like, she kind of is like on her tiptoes, like, tweedly deedly, like on the sidewalk waiting for Mark Wahlberg to come home to like tell her that she's pregnant, and it would like did that fit with
it
anything?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
It's just so bad. It's good.
There we go.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, except it makes me laugh every time.
And that's what's important.
The best part is that it just ends.
Yeah.
It just ends after that. It's just like, all right.
Hearing this is like someone who hasn't seen it. It's like trying to piece this together from an outside perspective is wild.
Yeah.
But you get the overall. Right?
Oh, I get the vibes.
You get the vibes. And the vibes are is that we actually don't understand anything that happens in the world, basically. And for as long as we don't understand anything, which is like going to be forever, like these crazy things are going to keep happening. And I think that's the other note that it ends off on of they're like, there's these news reports and they're like, we don't believe that it was natural. Like, we think it was the government. It's not happening anywhere else in the world. Maybe if it happened in one other place, everyone was killing themselves, then maybe we'd believe that this was some sort of, like, non-understandable phenomenon. But it's not happening anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the closing scene is that, like, but it's, like, about to happen somewhere else, too. And so it just, like, leaves you right there.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, yeah, we don't understand.
Yeah, it ends on like the Eiffel Tower or whatever, and everyone's just like frozen in time. And
it's
like,
oh my God, yeah. How? What is that random symptom of this disease? Is everyone freezes in time? But it's these shots of people like frozen in time. But they're like, you know, when people do the mannequin challenge, and you scroll past the person, like it pans past a person who's like just not quite fully frozen, and you're like, oh my God, you ruined it. That's like watching this movie because it pans past. Some people are really good at being frozen, and great job to them.
Yeah.
But some of the people who are supposed to be frozen due to a random symptom that is also never talked about again, that they freeze.
It's so good.
And they're not frozen. Like, they're just bad at freezing.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's all. Do you have anything else to add to that? Or
I think we can move on.
Okay. I think we need to move on.
I think we need to move on.
Yeah.
You know, the happening.
Okay, we're moving.
Check it out.
Check it out. If you're not convinced by now. Yeah, it's happening. We're going to talk about another, like, big theater release.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Morbius.
Morbius.
It's Morbin time.
It is. So, my God.
Tell us a little bit of a recap.
Well, Morbius, for the uninitiated, is about Michael Morbius, a scientist who becomes a vampire. And it just gets crazier from there.
Jared Leto.
Jared Leto, lead role. He was method acting for this, which is crazy because that's like, you can't go in like method acting, like this is what you deliver. Like this is the performance that like had you like, I don't even know, like hissing on set or something like that.
His method acting was probably just him walking around with crutches for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't he?
I imagine.
Didn't like, he do that? I feel I like I read that.
Yeah.
But it caused like major issues on set.
Well, he's done like crazy. Because like even for like Suicide Squad, like he was like method acting as the Joker as
Didn't he leave like a skunk in like one of his like co-actors trailers like that, or something? Yeah. Like
he's just like harassing people.
Yeah, that's not okay.
At like, that point.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Like, anyways, method actor. That's a whole other thing. But Jared Leto has actually described this movie as a big, fun popcorn movie, which I think it was, just not in the way he intended.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I had big, fun popcorn time when I went to go see this. I think I've seen it like 3 times now. I only saw it once in theaters because I got free tickets, I will say. I have not financially supported Morbius.
Hell yeah.
And it was crazy. Like, it just starts off insane. I've said this before, but it starts off insane, just gets crazy as you go, and you're like, no way, no way, no way. It just keeps building.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like part of it is like feeling like a part of something. Like when like the Morbius craze was happening, it felt like so much fun to be able to join in
on
like
everything
that was happening online. Be like, yeah, Sony, release it a third time. Come on. Please, we'll make money this time, I promise.
Yes.
And even like the director, like when they've spoken to him, he said he regrets making the film, which is crazy.
No.
Like he was like, yeah, another director may have been a better fit, which is just devastating to have to like go back on this, like to be known as the director of Morbius. I think something that would like haunt me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, where do you go from there?
Yeah,
well, only up because you can't go any further down.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
The writers found a way, because for those who do not know, two people wrote this, Burke Sharpless and Matt Sazama.
Okay.
Who, this is not their first foray into vampire media, actually. They wrote this 2014 movie, Dracula Untold.
Oh.
Which didn't do great.
Yeah.
Didn't do great, but I guess Studios was like, yeah, take another run at it. You guys can do vampires. You know what they are. Here's Morbius. Clearly they couldn't do that either, but, you know, forgive and forget, third time's a charm. They wrote Madam Web.
that's another
classic.
Sony banger.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is,
oh my goodness,
very much in. I watched that one as well because I'm nothing if not a sucker for these bad movies.
Yeah, I watched,
and that was genuinely so abysmal. I feel like I couldn't even enjoy it ironically. Like I was just sitting there like my soul was being sucked out through the TV screen.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't do it.
I think I watched it when I had COVID,
yeah.
And I just had to like be sitting watching random stuff.
Oh God. Jeez.
Yeah,
that's not a movie to watch while sick. That will make you feel so much worse.
Yeah. You poor souls.
Yeah,
I've never seen it, so I'm
you haven't seen Madam Web?
No, because like there's a distinction between so bad it's good and just bad.
Yeah.
And that's one that was like
bad,
told bad. It was just so bad, like don't bother. Like Cats.
Yeah.
Cats is horrible.
Cats,
do not watch Cats.
Abysmal. I think I've got through half of it. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
I did too. Like when Taylor Swift showed up, I was like, listen, I don't mind you, but in this movie, no. I'm turning it off.
Like anyone in that movie is just no.
Yeah.
That movie is terrible.
Terrible.
But do you think that they can grow on you?
No.
If you like, okay.
Certain ones, no.
Okay.
Cats, no way.
Some are
Madam Web.
That one is, I feel like, the difference between like Madam Web and Morbius for me is that Morbius had this like internet like sensation around it. Like I feel like it was part of something, you know?
Okay, really?
It was
yeah.
part of like, you know, getting like someone's like streaming it on Twitch for 12 hours before they like
yeah.
their channel got taken down. Like it's stuff like
yeah.
that where it's like it's kind of fun, you know, it brings
yeah.
people together. Mm-hmm. Madam Web is just bad.
Yeah.
And like they like, you know, people would like talk about it online, but
mm-hmm.
never to like the same degree
no.
as Morbius.
No, Morbius, it was a you had to be there
yeah.
kind of thing.
Okay,
yeah.
okay. So I haven't seen it, but now I want to see it. I'm not going to be a part of like the there crowd though, but I'm
yeah.
going to give it a shot either way.
Okay. Yeah. No, I highly recommend, especially showing it to someone who
yeah.
doesn't really know
what they're in for.
Yeah. Like going kind of blind.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, you think it's a fun little vampire movie. And
I feel like what also is so special about these types of movies is like if you're kind of like unique in the way that you've become obsessed with them, and like if you've watched, how many times did you say you've seen Morbius?
I've seen it 3 times, unfortunately.
When it gets to the point where you can kind of like quote the one-liners or something, like I feel that's literally most of the fun at that point. Yeah. Because like you're there and you're showing it to your friend or whatever, and you know those like super, super dumb one-liners that they randomly have.
It's like the Twilight movies. Like you're not watching those because you want to watch art. You want to watch Jacob go like, hey, what's going on, Loka, or whatever.
Yeah, where the hell have you been, Loka? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's like the Kissing Booth movies for me. Of like, because now I can like properly quote.
Oh,
and
over,
like rare talent, so bad it's good. That would be my pick. Definitely. Okay, wait. So do we want to play a little bit of Morbius, the soundtrack?
Why not?
Just to like give you guys a full experience.
Not again.
Yeah.
Back it's time. Morbid Sorry up. To you.
It's Morbin time.
Why is this so emotional?
I don't know.
Because Morbius is an emotional experience.
Yeah. Is it an emotional roller coaster? Have you been like false advertising just for shock factor and I'm going to watch it and it's like a tearjerker?
Yeah, this is devastating.
I plead the fifth, I cannot say.
Okay, let's move on. Our next movie that we're going to talk about, It's So Bad It's Good, Fateful Findings.
Okay. So this is where we're entering the true nitty-gritty of this art form.
Okay.
This is just the individual people, because usually it's like just this individual, usually a man, who writes it, directs it, stars in it, produces it, does like every single role in it.
Yes.
It's again like The Room is the blueprint, I think, for these kind of movies, because you know Tommy Wiseau is just such a perfect embodiment of that, and that's such a great gateway movie into this genre. But Fateful Findings is directed, starred in by this amazing man named Neil Breen. He is a Breenius.
Stop.
He is.
Did you come up with that?
No. This is all not my thoughts.
Okay.
But this man was like an architect who just one day was like, all right, I want to make movies now. And all of his movies are like him putting himself in this movie as like this righteous biblical character. Like literally one of his movies called I Am Here and then it's ... now is he literally comes to Earth as this like techno Jesus.
Oh my God.
Where he literally has like he turns his arms around and he has like robotic parts on him and like he goes up to people and judges them. So like he goes up to like this like gang that's like messing with the single mom. And he, like, waves his hand over them, and they're all crucified.
What the hell?
And then, there's, like, this old man in a wheelchair, and he, like, picks up, like, this teddy bear for the kid of the single mom. And he waves his hand over this guy, and he immediately turns into this, like, 30-year-old guy, and he just stands up out of the wheelchair.
It's oh, my like, God.
It's the most amazing thing ever. But, he has, like, these new movies. I haven't seen them, but they're called, like, Twisted Pear and then Cade the Tortured something, Tortured Crossing or something. But, like, it's, like, him playing two roles. One is, like, his, like, evil twin, and he has, like, the fakest, stupidest beard that he puts on. Like, just Google Twisted Pear and you'll see this image. It's incredible.
So he always stars in
his movies. He always stars in his movies. There's like, if the best part of watching a Neil Breen movie is watching the credits because you see how much he does. And I think one of the movies, like, there's like credits for like makeup and hairstyling, and then the name he puts on it, he just says none. And then lighting, none. And then it gets to the end of the credits, and it was like, oh, yeah, any corporation that begin with the letters N or B were actually done by Neil Breen. And they're fake corporations.
What?
It's the craziest thing ever. This man is amazing.
He invented names of corporations, but he just made them start with N or
B. Or N or B. And it's Neil Breen.
Yeah, I just looked up a picture of Twisted amazing, Hair. Huh? That is some crazy mustache action, I will say.
Oh, my God.
This guy has got wild prosthetic skills.
Oh, he's a legend. You know, he knows what he wants to make.
Yes.
And his magnum opus is this one called Fateful Findings. And it's a movie that just, like, you don't really know anything that's going on. Like, it starts off with him being hit by a car. And then he, like, gets, like, this stone, and he's, like, in the hospital, and, like, he stands up, and he just vanishes or something like that. And then, like, there's, like, a bunch of, like, this motif throughout the movie that's never explained of him, like, naked in this room that's clearly been, like, have, like, garbage bags all over them. So it's, like, this black room, and he's just naked in there just pondering the stone. And it's the craziest thing. But you're watching this for, like, 30 minutes, and you're like, okay, when is the plot going to kick in? And then he just magically, like, he's at his computer, and he's like, I'm hacking into all these government secrets to expose them. And he just, it's just like, and he has, like, the fake, like, these broken laptops that he always just damages throughout the movies. Like, he like, throws them off the table. He spills coffee on one of them in, like, one of the most hilarious scenes ever. But it's truly an experience. At the end, again, spoiler alert, he ends up exposing the secrets of the government, and he gets everyone to, like, line up and give, like, a speech. And, like,
it's, everyone who?
Like, everyone who's, like, in corporate America. Like,
okay.
This is a line from the movie. This guy with a mustache is like, I resign today as president of the bank.
Oh,
and then he takes a gun and he shoots himself.
No,
it's like, because, like, after all these, like, high up, like, government or, you know, just, like, corporate people expose their truth, they all end up killing themselves. Like, someone hangs themselves, someone, like, slits their wrist in the bath. Like, there's a lot of suicides in this movie.
What is with our theme of suicide today?
I don't know.
It's horrible.
These so bad it's good movies, you know, they gotta, you know, be a lighter tone.
Yeah, geez.
It's really crazy. Like,
he resigned from the bank.
I resigned today as president of
the bank.
Wow.
That's word for word what the line is.
That's some inspired writing right there.
So he wrote it. Did he write it?
Oh, he did everything.
Okay.
He did everything with this movie. This is his brainchild. It's his Breen child. And it's such a magical experience. Another line from the movie, it's such a magical day. It's a magical day every time you watch Fateful Findings.
Yes.
Just...
I'm honestly so impressed by, I guess this is just one of the other impressive things about So Bad It's Good,
mm-hmm.
is that, like, so he did everything. He wrote, directed, starred, edited, and so on.
Yeah, shot it.
Like, financed everything. It. From his day job, I
think he quit because, like, he used to be an architect, but then he just decided to make movies. So,
well, as you do.
So, does he have, like, a cult following?
Yes.
Like, that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, like, every time his movies premiere, there's always, like, this crowd that, like, gathers. Like, I think the last one, the Cade, the tortured artist, or whatever.
Okay.
That one, like, premiered in Seattle, and there was this huge turnout for it, and he was there, and, like, people were, like, asking him, like, what does it mean? And he's like, I don't know. That's for you to decide.
Yes. No, I'm obsessed with that.
He's like, every time he makes a movie, it's an event, and it's always at, like, the local kind of, like, fun theaters, like, in Vancouver. They'd probably be at, like, the Rio or something
that. Totally.
But it truly is just a magical, magical movie, and... he just makes magical movies, so support your local artists. That's what I gotta say.
I love it. Yeah, we gotta watch it. I watched the trailer, and visual effects is what blew me away the most, I have to say.
Yeah, there's a scene where, like, it's like a subplot of, like, his, like, Neil Breen's friends in the movie are like the dad, or like his like he's like an alcoholic, and like the wife is like he hates him, or she hates him, so like she shoots him because like he's like working on his car or something like that, and she comes in the garage and is like, "I'm gonna shoot this damn car full of holes," and then just bah, and then like it like a bullet just falls to the ground, and then like for some reason their daughter just appears, and she just goes, "You shot him." And then another cut, and it's just, Dad, and she's, like, holding him back. It's the craziest fucking thing ever. And then Neil Breen, obviously, shows up in the scene.
Yes.
And he's like, "I can't believe you've done this," because, like, it's framed like a suicide. She frames it like he killed himself. Again, suicide themes. It's crazy. But he's like, "I can't believe you've done this. I can't believe you've committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide?" And the entire time he's like, he's taking the fake blood off of him and he's like wiping it on his face.
Okay.
And then it's like, I think his name is Jim. Like Neil Breen just goes, "I can't get you out of this one, Jim."
Wow. Neil Breen.
Neil Breen.
Neil Breen, Fateful Findings.
He's a Breenius. Check him out. Okay. Will not be disappointed.
We'll leave it with that. He's a Breenius. I love that. Okay. I'd like to transition to our last movie. We want to leave lots of time to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And first things first, this is what needs to be said. To introduce it, and now, Captain Alex, the musical. Picture the Tiger Mafia. We'll explain them to you in a minute. Walk in slow motion as the narrator goes, "Action is coming." And this is the song that's playing instrumental in the background.
I've been cheated by you since I don't know when.
In the back. Okay. So this was not just a random excuse for me to play ABBA, because if you're a regular listener, you might know that I take any chance to play ABBA. But this actually happened, and now Captain Alex the Musical, instrumental Mamma Mia, starts playing. So let's talk about this. Who killed Captain Alex is the movie? It has two songs in it, and one of them is Mamma Mia. Yeah.
Try it. Before we tell the other one, I want you to think of what the other song could be in this movie. Yeah. It's amazing.
Any song.
Any song. Just think of any song.
Think of any song right now.
If you get it, you'll get a cookie.
So, who killed Captain Alex? This was a very small budget, very small film. We're going to the smallest of the small.
This movie was created by Wakaliwood Productions, which was the first action studio in Uganda. Directed by Nabwana IGG, and it was made on a budget of $200 in. I believe like Uganda was going through like a civil war at this time too.
Mm-hmm. It was rumored to be even less than that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's such a tiny micro budget that like the director didn't have space on his hard drive to make other movies, so he deleted the original cut of the movie so he could keep making other movies.
So funny.
It says at the beginning of this movie, when you watch it, this movie was never. He never anticipated this movie being seen outside of his village. This was just made for the locals of the village he grew up in. And this is such a special, special movie. You know, we've been saying that about all these movies, but this one in particular is so
real
special
this time.
Because it's just, you can just see the love and the passion in this movie. And it really, like, it makes it, like, it's not so much you're laughing at them, but you're laughing with them in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this, I don't know, like at least like 9 or 10 times, because this is an all-timer for me. It's super easy to watch. It's like an hour.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube for free. It's a beautiful, magical experience. What are your guys' thoughts? Because you just saw it for the first time.
Yeah, we just watched it.
Yeah, it was transformative, I think. Like, it is... It definitely, like, yeah, the DIY feel is so endearing. Like, it feels like kind of like when you watch back on, like, old school projects or something that you did. And, like, you can tell everyone's just having so much fun making it. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, the corporate, like, manufactured, like, Morbius, like, The Happening, where it's, like, there is money behind this, you know? Like, these guys like had like pan flute covers and a dream. And the second song for those waiting with bated breath is Kiss from a Rose. I didn't see it coming. That was a crazy twist. M. Night Shyamalan could actually never.
He really could.
That was wild. But watching this for the first time was insane. Like, there's this VJ Emmy.
It stands for Video Joker.
Yeah. He is, like, narrating this whole movie every now and again, and he'll just interject with something, like, anything that's happening in the movie. It doesn't have to relate.
Not even in the movie. No. Just, like, he just randomly at some, like, multiple times, he's like, you are watching Who Killed Captain Alex, and I am VJ Emmy on the mic.
I think he's what made the movie for me. Like, absolutely. That, you'll have to talk more about that because you know it best. I mean, to be fair, when I first started watching, and then I got like 10 minutes and I was like, I think I'm watching the wrong version or something. Like, this voice keeps coming in. I thought it was like, I recently started a movie that it was like, they were reading, like voicing French subtitles, like at the same time as the English was happening. And I didn't realize till like 10 minutes in that, okay, this isn't just an artistic choice. I'm actually just watching the wrong version of this movie. And I thought that I was in one of those situations again. So I had to stop and then circle back. And I read a little bit more that the reason that this copy with VJ Emmy only exists because the other one was deleted from the hard drive. So I was on the right copy. You will be on the right copy when you hear VJ Emmy and embrace it.
Embrace it.
Is all we
That's
have to
say.
That's
all you got to do. The movie is on, as VJ Emmy says.
Yeah. The movie is on.
The tiger is in the cage.
So tell us more about like VJ Emmy or anything else about the plot. We haven't really talked a lot about the plot yet.
Not really a plot. it's like... So there's like this guy, Captain Alex, the titular character, who is like, he's trying to stop this gang called the Tiger Mafia. And they have like their tattoo or their insignia is like literally just like a painted T on someone's abdomen. It's the funniest thing. And eventually, like, there's like a raid or something like that. And Captain Alex dies. Hence the question, who killed Captain Alex? We never know.
Yeah.
We never find out. And the movie literally ends with, like, the what's this guy, Richard, which most intimidating name for a mafia boss, Richard. He's like, but who killed Captain Alex? And then, like, VJ Emmy's like, I want to thank you for watching Who Killed Captain Alex. Check out, but it's just, it's such an experience. Like, and one of my favorite parts of this movie, too, is, like, the kung fu and like the action is actually well done.
Yeah.
Like it's actually crazy how like they
really well
action. Yeah. Action. Action.
Movie. Action. Action packed movie.
I loved the action.
It's so good.
The fight scenes were so good. The Mamma Mia comes in right before the first major scene between like Captain Alex's men and the Tiger Mafia. Huge, lots of death, lots of bloodshed.
Do you guys notice, like, especially in, like, the gun scenes, how, like, they keep reusing the same people, but, like, they put, like, different clothes on them?
Really?
Like, there's, like, the Spider-Man guy. Like, they have the hoodie.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, it's,
him.
It's so great. And then, like, this is another one where, like, I think such an important part of So Bad It's Good movies are, like, the one-liners and everything. And this movie's full of them. Like, there's, like, one of my favorites is, and they're all usually coming from VJ Emmy, which is the funniest part, where he's just, like, introducing this, like, guy who's super good at kung fu, and he's like, Ugandan Bruce Lee, we call him Bruce Yu.
Iconic.
It's incredible. It makes it so much better how you can see just the passion and just the love of movies in this. It's just, it's so incredible.
I feel like that's like part of like the charm of these indie, like low budget movies is like, there's just so much heart going into these. Like it is just people being like, I want to make a movie. Might as well, you know, I don't have the funding, but I'm going to make it happen. And it's just like, it's so nice to see like people just actually going out and like making things.
Yep.
And then these things just being something like Who Killed Captain Alex, which is just like so like infinitely rewatchable and infinitely quotable. It's just one of those things where like every 10 seconds you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That could be a Letterboxd one-liner. That could be my Letterboxd one-liner. Yeah. That could be my Letterboxd one-liner.
Yeah.
Like just so nice to see like this is like what makes me feel like, oh yeah, like cinema is alive and well. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing like these like low budget movies. Mm-hmm. Like so much fun.
Yeah. No, it's I love it. I love it so much. You can never get tired of this movie. There's just so much compacted into these 60 minutes that it's just like,
yeah.
It just goes by and you're like, all right, let me do this again.
It flies by, and also it flies by in the way that like some things that might, I don't know, I might have thought would bother me, like visual effects or something. Mm-hmm. I honestly wasn't thinking about that too much because the action is actually so action-packed that you're not really thinking about the explosions all that much, or like that the gunfire is like added in, like that type of stuff.
No, it's so endearing, I think, to just see, like, you know, it's bad, but like it's just like it just makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside just seeing, like, you know, like the guy, the pilot, like going out the window with an AK-47 and just shooting at people and just like, and like the guys just jumping in the bushes, just, you know, giving it their all. It's such an amazing movie. Like you I cannot speak highly enough of this movie.
I have to ask, so you've gone back like so many times.
Yes.
Does each watch, I'm not sure, like layer wise like new meaning, and that's not necessarily what I mean, but like, I don't know, when I first talked to Emma about it, like right after I'd watched it, I was like, I'm kind of like a little bit lost, like I wasn't really like knowing who was who and stuff like that, and maybe I just wasn't tuned in enough. Do you like really, really understand it now? Like, are you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, again, it's not like one of those like David Lynch movies where it's just like he just put shit on the screen and it's like, all right, you figure it out now. Like, it's there's not a lot of layers to it.
Yeah.
But like once you watch it enough, it's just like it becomes like you know kind of the gist of the plot. But like honestly, that's not what really matters in my opinion with this movie. It's more so just seeing how these people are just like interacting with their environment and each other. And, you know, especially because like this is, they're essentially like living in a slum, and they're, you know, they're exploring this area through this medium that is, so it's like, it's half, you know, like for your enjoyment, for your amusement. And other half is like, you know, exposing you to like something you wouldn't have seen had you not watched this. Because, you know, like, have you guys ever seen a Ugandan action movie or, like, a Ugandan movie in general?
No.
No, I never would have.
Exactly. So it's something very important, I think, that we need to, like, preserve things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that it's incredibly enjoyable and it's the best thing ever.
I think it is, yeah. It's, like, so nice to be able to see movies from, like, places I normally wouldn't have. Like, what other period in my life would I be running into like a film from Uganda? Like conceivably never. I guess unless I sought it out or like screening at a local cinema. Mm-hmm. Like even like finding like films from outside of like North America, it's like that already feels like something that isn't like happening a lot. Yeah. Like it's still
Kind of have to like be intentional. Like they're not gonna come to you.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's usually if they are, they're like very like art housey, you know, I hate using this word, but like I guess pretentious movies.
Yeah.
So like you're never gonna encounter something so gung ho, like Who Killed Captain Alex. Mm-hmm. So it's such a unique movie, and I really appreciate it for, you know, especially being available like it is, and just it's such an experience. I love it, love it, love it, love it.
I love that he's like completely self taught.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like no filmmaking education.
Absolutely.
I think that's so awesome.
You know, he never, or at least I don't know now, but like at the time of making this, he never stepped foot in a movie theater before.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, he like he would just like watch movies on like the local TV or whatever. Like, and like this movie too, there's no like menu to it if you have like a physical copy, because a lot of the customers in Uganda don't have TV remotes. So they can't like press play on it. So it's better for them to just start the movie.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's incredible. And I love how, you know, like the internet's such a horrible thing, but sometimes it can make something like this so amazing.
Oh,
so.
Totally.
It's such like a community oriented movie. Like absolutely. You can really feel like this is something that he's trying to like give back to the community with.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's so like, you can really see that. Like passion and that sort of care going into this. Like, I know he's, like, spoken about, the director, like, trying to make film, like, more accessible as a medium yes. through his movies instead of just, like, limiting it to, like, the rich, which I think is just, like, such a, like, we don't, like, really see that, like, happening mm-hmm. nowadays, directors. Like, this is just, like, one guy who's going out and, like, making these movies with such a small budget just to try and, like, you know, support, like, his own community and, like, yeah. give them something like this, which is, like, so awesome. I think that it's so accessible, like, that we get to see this as well. We can sit in on his journey to making mm-hmm. this happen.
Absolutely.
Well, let's give a little bit of a listen to the one we've all been waiting for, Kiss from a Rose. All right, here it is.
Snows, my eyes become alive, and the light that you shine can't be seen. Baby, I compare you to a kiss from a rose on the grave. Ooh, the more I get, I feel stranger it feels. Yeah, and now that your rose is in bloom, a light hits the gloom on the grave.
All right. That was Kiss from a Rose, Seal, played at what point in the film?
At multiple points.
Multiple points. Yeah.
And it's not the original version. It's this, like, instrumental panpipe version.
Yes. Yeah.
That is wonderful.
All right. Well.
Sorry, Ty.
I'm so glad that we finally got to do this episode of It's So Bad, It's Good. It's been a long time coming. Yes. And we're so glad that we got to hear your perspective on these. Because, like, while we did just cram watching a couple in, like, you know him so well. So yep. thank you so much for coming on, Zach.
I'll try and make a list, hopefully at some point. And, I don't know, can promote that or something. But thanks for having me. It's always yeah. a pleasure to be on this show. You guys are awesome.
Oh, you'll come again soon, won't you?
I hope so. I have something to say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tune in again next week, 4 to 5.
Yeah, Real World, Lily and Emma. We'll be here.
Bye for now.